Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So before I begin, I just have to say that the music this morning is filling me with such joy, especially the piece that you played, Austin, so thank you for that. So there was a German writer in the 19th century by the name of Feuerbach, and he wrote a book called The Essence of Christianity. This text was deeply influential on later writers such as Darwin, Marx, Engels, and Freud. Now, you might have noticed that that list of later writers, they're not exactly known as the bulwarks of Christianity, right? So what is this essence that Feuerbach claims Christianity has? Well, he says, it has imagination. It has ideals. And it has humanity. In the consciousness of the infinite, Feuerbach says, the conscious subject has for his object the infinity of his own nature. In other words, when humans are thinking about God or the infinite, they run headlong into the vast and unplumbed depths of human ability. In other words, when Feuerbach talks about God, he's talking about a projection of the highest human ideals. He writes, and forgive the 19th century language here, if man is to find contentment in God, he must find himself in God. So God, for Feuerbach, is a term that's used to mean moral law or love or whatever we believe to be the best and the brightest and the highest, right? So you might have guessed that Feuerbach was not exactly a hit with the church crowd. While certain sections of society celebrated his liberal thought, others reviled him, and he died in poverty, living on handouts from friends. This didn't mean he passed into obscurity. I already told you that his work was deeply influential. So what are we to make of this idea that God is the projection of highest human ideals? For Feuerbach, this wasn't a dismissal of the importance of God or of religion. He understood that such a projection gives humans something to strive toward, and a way to connect to something that is larger than oneself. It removes the supernatural from religion in the most literal sense, right? Instead of the supernatural, the beyond nature, Feuerbach insists that nature itself, both human nature and the natural world, hold divine abundance. So when we take a micro view, we get all the foibles and follies of the world, you know, someone accidentally hitting their thumb with a hammer, or lightning destroying a beautiful tree, or a squirrel stealing everything from the bird feeder, like happens in my yard. But when we step back into the macro view, we get the infinite possibility of this pale blue dot and all that is within it. So how does that sound to you as an idea of conception of God? Pretty interesting. Well, I have to say it wouldn't have been very appealing to the 17th century French monk by the name of Brother Lawrence. A former soldier, he had a rough appearance but great gentleness of spirit. He attracted many followers. He was known to his fellow monks as someone who carried peace with him wherever he went. His teachings and letters are gathered into a work called The Practice of the Presence of God. Brother Lawrence believed in the Christian God, which he certainly saw as more than the collection of highest human ideals. But his God was not a being of judgment who demanded tears, but rather a presence that supported and gave meaning to existence. Brother Lawrence taught, and again, please excuse the dated language, that we should establish ourselves in a sense of God's presence by continually conversing with him. Notice, no feelings of unworthiness, no calls for mercy in the face of righteous judgment, right? Just continuous conversation. Brother Lawrence calls us into reciprocity and relationship with the divine. He says, and I quote, that many do not advance in the Christian progress because they stick in penances and particular exercises while they neglect the love of God, which is the end. Connection with the divine, he told his followers, is not some set of rules to follow or rejection of your own bodily existence. It's rather recognizing that actions that start in love end in love. Now, there's something to remember in this chaotic and crazy-making world, this angry and contentious society. As I was reading The Practice of the Presence of God recently, I was struck by how many of its teachings mirror teachings from other religions and scriptures. And I'd like to share a few of these with you. First, Brother Lawrence wrote that we ought to give ourselves up to God with regard both to things temporal and spiritual, and seek our satisfaction only in fulfilling his will, whether he lead us by suffering or consolation. For all would be truly equal to a soul truly resigned. Now, this echoes the Tao Te Ching, which says, sometimes things are ahead, sometimes they're behind. Sometimes breathing is hard, sometimes it comes easily. Sometimes there is strength and sometimes weakness. Sometimes one is up and sometimes down. Therefore, the sage avoids extremes, excesses, and complacency. So these teachings call us to be so grounded in what we know to be right and good and true that the vagaries of life don't sway us, that we don't feel so much blessed with the good things and cursed with the bad things, but rather that we understand that all of it is life and its many turns are a holy journey. So second, Brother Lawrence tells us that to arrive at such resignation as God requires, we should watch attentively over all passions which mingle, as well in spiritual things as in those of a grosser nature. So we are straight up in the realm of Buddhist understanding of attachment and aversion here. Buddhist thought holds that our passions lead us to suffering, even passions for what we might call the good, such as justice and love. Buddhist teaching instead points the way to a way of being where we feel our emotions, but are not ruled by them. Where we work and experience joy and sorrow and know love and hatred, but do not get lost in any of them. Where rather than refusing to believe that the world is what it is and blinding ourselves to what we are, we accept the truth of the world and of ourselves, which gives us the place from which to change what can be changed, to make better what can be bettered. Third, Brother Lawrence writes, whatever becomes of me, whether I be lost or saved, I will always continue to act purely for the love of God. Now, this reminded me so much of a famous prayer by 8th century Sufi Muslim Saint Rabia. If I adore you out of fear of hell, burn me in hell. If I adore you out of a desire for paradise, lock me out of paradise. But if I adore you for yourself alone, do not deny to me your eternal beauty. So Brother Lawrence and Rabia are telling us that it's just as self-seeking to require some sort of recompense and reciprocation for our actions of love and compassion as it is to fear the consequences of our actions of ill will and animosity. If we act either solely to avoid negative repercussions or to seek a reward, we're missing the whole point of love, which should be freely given. Right? And finally, Brother Lawrence shares that he was more united to God in his outward employments than when he left them for devotion in retirement. So Brother Lawrence had a job in the monastery's kitchen, which he didn't particularly like, but he saw it as a way to serve his brother monks. He believed that it was more important to do actual work for the good of the community than to spend it in time of what is traditionally considered spiritual actions like prayer and meditation. He didn't see spirituality as something that lived in an ivory tower, but rather as getting your hands dirty, doing what needs to be done. So likewise, the Hindu notion of karma yoga tells us that to do good work because there is the good work to do, that's our job. That our purpose is to strive for what is just and loving, even when it is out of reach. The Bhagavad Gita says to perform actions as a matter of duty, because by working without being attached to the fruits, one attains the supreme. In other words, don't get all ego-bound with the pursuit of success or fear of failure. Do the right thing and let go of the need to get something good out of it. So essentially, the practice of the presence of God is about equanimity, relationship, doing things for the sake of love and truth rather than selfish gains or the demands of the ego. Acting in these ways, Brother Lawrence says, will bring us to a holy freedom. Holy freedom. I like that idea. It reminds me of St. Augustine's injunction to love and do as you will. When we act in holy freedom, we're not weighed down by the fear of consequences or thoughts that we're not good enough or materialistic demands. We act in a spirit of love and compassion with ease. In holy freedom, we act from our truest selves, without all the anxiety and anger and guilt and shame and worry that gets layered on top of our truest selves. Holy freedom is where we are most brilliantly human. Bringing Feuerbach back into this mix, we can see that we can practice the presence of God whether or not we believe in God. We can practice being in constant communion with our highest and holiest ideals, and prioritizing relationship over wanting to be right. We can weather the storms of life and still hold on to ourselves, recognizing that every up is going to be followed by a down. Every ending brings with it a new beginning. We can hold on to possibility in the midst of what already is, recognizing that we carry the potential for greater truth, greater connection, greater joy. We carry the potential for holy freedom. And so does the person next to us, and the person far away from us, and the person we don't like, and the person we love the most. And this knowledge, my friends, is truly divine abundance. Amen and blessed be.